Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation In the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the beyond nicotine experience with its beyond tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, beyond tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TryTAT.com.
Broadcasting live from the RNR studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, it's the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, presented by Tequila Embajador.
What's good, Raider Nation? Welcome back to Raider Nation Radio In the Huddle. Vinny Bonsignor brought to you by Tequila Embajador. We're going to go right out to the Raider Nation guest line and welcome in my good friend Sam Gordon and my colleague over at the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Sam, how are you doing? Where'd you go on your vacation? Did we go back to Minneapolis, get some cool weather? And if so, what was the weather like in Minneapolis?
Yeah, Vinny, how you doing? Beautiful. Summer in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. It was great to be back. Had the chance. I remember one time we talked. I was at the Jake, or known as Progressive Field. And I had the chance to go check out a ball game at the beautiful Target Field. A little Twins Reds action last week. So all in all, it was a great trip. Beautiful weather. A nice break from the 115 to sweltering temperatures of Las Vegas. But happy to be back and getting in my groove as we get ready here for the last month before training camp.
All right, so we are, were we 4 weeks away, what is it today? It's the end of the 28th. We're less than 4 weeks away from the official opening of training camp. The Raiders veterans report on July 27th. It's literally right around the corner. I can't believe it. I love it. As the roster sits today, Sam, do you feel like the Raiders are good to go? Is there anything that's glaring at you that needs to be addressed, or that you're super, super concerned with, or do you feel pretty good about where this roster is right now?
Yeah, I think all things considered, I feel pretty good. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't a couple question marks, right? Offensive line, I think we're going to have to see how that unit gels, how some of the young players step up and how they emerge, filling in, now replacing the great veterans that were part of this offensive line for so long. And I think, you know, as we talked about throughout the course of the summer, spring and summer, early part of the summer, the secondary, right? But when you look at it from a talent perspective, I mean, it feels like they've addressed the hole. And all of a sudden, you have depth on your defensive line. You bring back a linebacking core that is solid, was solid last year, and you figure it could be even better this year. You go out and you address the defensive backfield. You add depth. You create competition. I think we know what to expect from DC coming off of the year that he had last year where he performed like a top 10 quarterback. You have multiple running backs that you can go to. Josh Jacobs, of course, in his third year, healthy again, and then a proven feature back, right? And Kenyon Drake, a guy who's been a feature back the last few years. We'll see how that tandem looks, but no concerns there. And then the skill position players, Darren Waller, one of the best in the league. Henry Ruggs, you expect him to be better in year two. Same with Brian Edwards. Hunter Renfro comes back as a solid option in the slot. And then you have depth behind those guys with Willie Sneed, John Brown, Zay Jones. You know, we'll see how those guys develop. But when I look at the roster, there's not necessarily a glaring weakness. Now, that doesn't mean every unit is going to be a strength. I don't expect the Raiders to be world beaters this year. But all things considered, I think they did a good job of addressing the weaknesses and at least doing themselves a favor and shoring them up. The addition of Gus Bradley, I think, I'm not sure exactly what to expect from this defense, but I think it's going to be better. But, yeah, all things considered, I like where this roster sits. I think it's going to be an improved roster. I think the record's going to bear that out. I don't know if that necessarily means a playoff berth, but you look at this team, and I don't think there are necessarily any glaring weaknesses from each unit. Maybe, positionally, we have to find out who wins some of these position battles. But overall, I think it's a much more talented and a more experienced roster in 2021 than it was in 2020.
Okay, you say maybe not world beaters. Totally understand that. Not
expecting the Raiders to you know, win the Super Bowl this year. But, you know, there's world beaters, and then there's, you know, that next level down and a level down from that as well. As you forecast the season, assuming there's no glaring injuries, you know, to some key players, maybe not world beaters, but where do you think they slide in this AFC race?
I think this is a team that has the requisite talent and now again the experience where I think the expectation should be competing for a wild card berth, right? And what is that going to look like in 2021 with that 17th game? I'm not sure. I think we're going to have to kind of see how the season plays out to figure before we have an understanding of how that 17th game impacts these races and whatnot. But let's take a look at the last 2 years, right? This is a team that was in the wild card mix going into December each of the last two seasons. And that the AFC, last I checked, was still really good the last couple of years. It wasn't like it was bad. It's always been, at least the last few years, been a stronger conference, and the Raiders have been right there. So when you take a look at the schedule, now, as we know, it's a challenging schedule. There aren't necessarily any giddies, as you would say. They're going to have to play well in order to earn that playoff berth. But I think 9-8, 10-7, when you take a look at how the schedule breaks out, is a reasonable goal and a reasonable expectation. And, you know, maybe 10-7 gets you in the playoffs. Maybe it's 9-8. Maybe it's 11-6. But I firmly expect this team to be competing for a playoff berth with some of the Tennessees of the world, right? With Indianapolis, with Pittsburgh. I think on that tier of teams, they should be right there in the mix in terms of competing for a playoff berth. And I think that should be the expectation based on what we've seen the last couple years and based on all the moves this team has made. So that you would think that this offense, being that it was at a top 10 level last year, can duplicate that. And if the defense improves from, you know, bottom five to even middle of the pack, that should be good enough to be in the mix for a playoff berth, you know, coming down the stretch.
We're talking to my good friend Sam Gordon from the Las Vegas Review Journal, my teammate. Always respect everything that he does, and you can catch everything that he does, whether you want to download the app Vegas Nation or go to the site vegasnation.com. There's also the Las Vegas Review Journal go to the site to read all of his coverage, boxing. The WNBA is doing a fantastic job. UNLV, the Raiders, Sam wears many, many hats and wears them all really, really well. Sam, Vic Tafer from The Athletic wrote an article today. He was kind of, I don't know if it was more of a headline thing or the story thing. I read through it, through his story, but the gist of it was that Derek Carr could be facing a make or break year. He's got 2 years left on his contract. And the insinuation was, the gist was, he really needs to, you know, put this team on his shoulders, maybe get to the playoffs, deliver a really good year in order to protect his future stake here in Las Vegas, here with the Raiders. I think he's going to be fine. I think that if the defense holds up in its end of the bargain, it's going to help Derek Carr along with that cause in terms of making the playoffs, securing his future here, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you never know. And, you know, he still does only have 2 years left on his contract. There's no more guaranteed money left on that contract. Where do you stand on where Derek Carr fits into things, not just presently, but moving forward?
Yeah, great question. I think you can just take a look at his play. You know, the last several seasons, he's been fairly consistent, right? You're good for about 4,000 yards, 25 to 30 touchdowns. He's going to complete a high percentage of his passes, and he's pretty durable, right? Outside of the 2016 season, he breaks his leg there towards the end of the year, or whatever, broken ankle, whatever that exact injury was, and then 2017 he missed a game, but he's been very, very reliable, and he's been available, reliable. I think for the most part, he's played at a high level. Now, that said, I don't think it's, you know, it's not exactly breaking news that he's the kind of quarterback where you need pieces around him in order to bring out the best in him. You need, like you said, a strong defense, or at least a defense that doesn't give up 150 yards a game on the ground and give quarterbacks all day to throw like the unit last year. But if you give him a quality defense, and you give him playmakers around him, I think he's proven what he can do, and his production and his play and his leadership have been one of the constants amongst the turnover in this organization the last several years. Now, that said, I do think, yeah, a playoff berth, I think, would solidify his standing here as the Raiders quarterback the next few years, and depending on how he performs. If he duplicates what he did last season and plays at that level and with that consistency, even if the defense doesn't hold up its end of the bargain, if he plays at a high level, I think he's still in solid standing moving forward. Because if you want to move off a guy, you got to figure, well, who are you going to replace him with, right? And yes, there's been a number of rookie quarterbacks that have come in and been really, really good right away, and I think it's easier to have success at that position from day one now than it was in the past based on some of the rule changes and based on some of the situations these guys are lining up in. But there are quarterbacks, and there's not just upgrades floating around out there. Like, it's not like you can just go find a quarterback that's automatically better than Derek Carr. He's been really, really good for quite some time, and I think he gets a little bit of an unfair rap. Football is a team sport. You have the quarterbacks like the Patrick Mahomes, like the Tom Brady's of the world, the Aaron Rodgers, that can go out there and win you games that you're not supposed to win. But those guys are few and far between. And even you take a look at the supporting cast that they've had out throughout the course of their careers and the defenses they've played with and the situations they've been in, they've always had help around them. And Derek Carr hasn't always been in that situation. So make or break feels like a little bit of a stretch. I don't know if it's necessarily make or break, but at the same time, I do think there's a sense of urgency within the organization. And, of course, from Derek Carr, I mean, he's as competitive as they come. He wants to make the playoffs. And if he makes the playoffs this year, has a team in contention, and does what he's supposed to do, I think he's going to position himself to continue to be the franchise quarterback here, you know, for the next few years moving forward.
Talking to Sam Gordon, you can follow him at By Sam Gordon. He covers the Raiders along with a lot of other stuff for the Las Vegas Review Journal. As you look at the AFC West, the Chargers, always kind of talk about the Chargers. There's always seems to be a lot of talent. They always seem to be on the cusp of turning the corner. Obviously, we know what the Kansas City Chiefs are all about. What worries you and concerns you in the AFC West?
Well, the Chiefs are going to be really, really tough again, right? Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, all those skill position players. The Super Bowl contender, you would think, as long as Patrick Mahomes is healthy. But other than that, I see the Raiders as probably the second-best team in the division. I really like Justin Herbert. I think he's an emerging star, and that's not a secret. He was incredible last year. But you're dealing with a first-year head coach. They've addressed that offensive line, but we have to see how that offensive line plays out and what that defense looks like with their new head coach, being that old staff is out of there. So like you said, the Chargers have kind of developed as a reputation, that a very talented team that never seems to live up to that talent. And as far as Denver's concerned, until they solidify that starting quarterback and get a franchise quarterback in there, I don't think the Raiders have much to be worried about by the way of the Broncos. So I do expect the Chargers to be better, right? I did like what they did in the draft and some of the moves they made in free agency, but the same thing is up with the Raiders. They made upgrades too. I mean, they I believe, also got better, and they were the second-place team. The Raiders were the second-place team in this division a year ago. So I'd expect it to play out the same way, right? Like, the Chiefs, we know are going to be there as a Super Bowl contender, but there are still too many unknowns in L.A. and in Denver for me to definitively say that I think they're going to be better than the Raiders. And when you take a look at the division matchups, of course, these teams all know each other very, very well. You never know what can happen in a rivalry game, as we saw with the Raiders going into Arrowhead Stadium a year ago and upsetting the Chiefs and handing them their only home loss of the season. You never know what can happen. But on paper, when I take a look at these rosters, I think the Raiders, all things considered, should be the second best team in this division. And whether that means 9-8, 10-7, 11-6, I'm not sure. But I would think, given what they have now, that the balance that they have on both sides of the ball, you would figure that they're going to still be better than Chargers and Denver. Won't be concerned with Denver unless they somehow maybe make a move for Aaron Rodgers. If that trade happens, we're having a different conversation. But right now, too much uncertainty at quarterback for them to be taken seriously.
Is there a team in the NFL that you think people are sleeping on, Sam Gordon?
Ooh, a team in the NFL that I think people are sleeping on. Oh, geez. That is a good question. How about the Minnesota Vikings? Maybe that's just the hometown of me talking, but they addressed their offensive line. I like what they did in the draft and addressed their offensive line. They go out there and get Christian Darrisaw. That was an area of weakness for this team for the last several years, even when they were making those playoff runs with Kirk Cousins. Their skill position players are as good as any in the league, with Justin Jefferson, with Adam Thielen, with Dalvin Cook. That is a big-time trifecta on the offensive side of the ball. And then defensively, they get Danielle Hunter back. One of the best defensive players in football. They were not good last year on that side of the ball. It was the worst defense Mike Zimmer had. But you add your big-time pass rusher back, you get healthy win on that side of the ball, and Mike Zimmer's proven to be a really good defensive coach. throughout the course of his career. So I don't know if they're a sleeper in the sense that I don't think they're going to necessarily make a Super Bowl run, but I think they were pretty bad last year given the talent they had on the roster. And with a better defense and a better offensive line, it's a team that I can see making a push for a wild card berth in the NFC and maybe even winning the division depending on what happens with that Aaron Rodgers situation. Now, he's there in Green Bay, and I think that's what I would expect at this point in the offseason. It's still their division for the taking, but the Vikings have made the playoffs before with Kirk Cousins as a quarterback, and I think they're going to be better, and the talent is obviously there. So that would be a little bit of a sleeper team for me in terms of making noise in the NFC wildcard race and in the NFC North.
Sam, you cover the WNBA. You're covering the Las Vegas Aces, doing a great job. What do we know about the Aces to this point in the season?
We know that they're as talented as any team in the league, if not the most talented team in the league, and that they are have not now that they have that now that the pieces are starting to click. I think it's the best offensive team in the league, and has the tools and the potential to be the best defensive team in the league. I think you look last year. They were so reliant on A.J. Wilson to carry a lot of the burden without Liz Cambage, without Kelsey Plum. And, you know, she proved that she's the MVP of this league and can do that. But now I think there's so much more balance. And I think they're starting to – they know who the top seven players are. They know who to play when and who to go to when. And I think they're starting to have an understanding of how to beat teams in different ways. You know, one night it might be the post players, right? Another night it might be the bench comes in with Kelsey Plum and Derek Hamby, and they have a big surge. It might be Chelsea Gray one night. There's so many. They have so many different ways they can beat you, and I think that's what we've learned through this halfway point of the season. And, you know, players and coaches talk about there's still room to grow and there's still time to develop chemistry. I think that's true. This group, for all intents and purposes, has only been together for half a season, but they are starting to figure out what their identity is, and their identity is that they have multiple identities. They have multiple ways that they can beat you, and I think as the season rolls along, they get through the Olympic break. They're only going to solidify that, and come playoff time, I think they're the team to beat. Obviously, the Seattle Storm aren't going anywhere with Breanna Stewart, but the Aces are really, really good, and they're a fun team to watch. And I think for just basketball fans or people in Las Vegas who are looking for something to do or for a team to be interested in, the Aces are definitely fun. They're a championship contender, and the games have a great atmosphere. So that's what we've known so far, right? We knew they were good last year, but they've been good the past couple years. They still got to get it done in the postseason. But the way they look, they don't have any glaring weaknesses. They could shoot it a little better, but they don't have any glaring weaknesses. Well, I think every other team in the league, for the most part, does. They have an exploitable weakness, and the Aces don't.
Sam Gordon, you know we always appreciate the time and the enlightenment. We really appreciate it. Take care of yourself. I'm sure we'll talk to you down the road. Football season is right around the corner. Keep doing your thing with everything else that you cover. But, man, I can't wait for the season to start and for us to really be chopping it up about games and all that kind of stuff, man. Thank you very much.
Anytime, Vinny. I appreciate you having me. We'll talk soon.
You got it. That's Sam Gordon. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore, brought to you by Tequila and Bonner.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignore. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignore on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Our thanks again to Sam Gordon from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Always does a great job shedding light on the Raiders and everything else that he covers. And we're definitely keeping an eye on the Aces, doing a great job so far this year under Bill Laimbeer. Now that I'm living in Las Vegas, I got a root, I guess, for Bill Laimbeer. Oh, boy. When I was working for the Lakers, Bill Laimbeer and the Pistons were certainly a thorn in the Lakers side, as they were for many teams in the NBA, including the great Michael Jordan, who people seem to forget kept getting his seasons ended by people like the Detroit Pistons and the Boston Celtics long before he ever sniffed the NBA Finals. It's funny how people always forget that about Michael Jordan. Well, he was 6-0 in the Finals. Yeah, he was 0-7 the 7 years before trying to get there. And just to put it all in perspective, Magic Johnson went to the NBA Finals his first year. Larry Bird went to the NBA Finals his second year. Magic Johnson was in the Finals 9 out of his first 11 years. He lived in the NBA Finals. So don't give me the nonsense that, oh, well, you know, yes, he was undefeated in the Finals. I give Michael Jordan that. He was arguably the best player in the NBA, no doubt about that. But this notion that he was a perfect player all the way through just fails to to really recognize the path and the journey that it took him. There's a reason why he was bawling his head off in the locker room at the Forum, and I was there when he won his first NBA championship. Because people don't know this now, because you know, unless you were there, it's almost impossible to know. But the growing pains it took Michael Jordan and the Bulls to finally win a championship after getting their heads handed to them by Larry Bird and the Celtics, and Isaiah Johnson and Bill Laimbeer, Isaiah Thomas and Bill Laimbeer and that crew from the Detroit Pistons. It took a lot out of Michael Jordan and the Bulls. There was talk, there were stories being written about, well, maybe he doesn't have what it takes to win a championship. Maybe he's not a championship player. Maybe he's just a guy that gets a bunch of stats. We've heard that before, haven't we? It's funny. And it was really, more than anything, Larry Bird and that crew had to phase out a little bit, and that's what happened. Larry got hurt. The back injury really started plaguing him. Guys got older. The Detroit Pistons, starting to get a little older. They started making some changes. And finally, the Detroit Pistons were able to get the best of them. The Chicago Bulls were finally able to get to the Detroit Pistons. So it happens. But it wasn't like Michael Jordan just got in to the NBA and was winning right off the bat. That didn't happen. We're going to go out to the Raider Nation. Listener line, Gangster Raider wants to talk about the Raiders. And I guess Gangster Raider sounds like you took the stadium tour. What do you think about Allegiant Stadium?
Oh, man, it's the best. You know what I'm saying? It was worth the wait. I watched every day on YouTube. You know, shout out to Duntoff 1967 on Instagram. And YouTube, he videoed this building, the stadium, every day since they broke ground, Las Vegas local. And he videotaped every day from them building the stadium. And I watched the videos. So to finally actually get up into the stadium, it was awesome. Plus, we was down here celebrating my girlfriend, Eartha's birthday. And she took the stadium tour with me. And now she's officially Raider Nation. So if y'all can, I want y'all to wish her a happy birthday, Eartha, and a welcome, official welcome to the Raider Nation. Because after you finish the tour, that's what the tour guys tell you. Now you're officially part of the Raider Nation. And she got a little Raiders blinged out mask and Raider hat, Raider everything now. So she's officially Raider Nation. And we also went to the Raiders Tavern and Grill. We went on Friday, and we liked it so much, we went again on Sunday. You know what I'm saying? I saw this guy up in there on Sunday, Benny. I thought it was you. I went up to him and introduced myself, and he was like, "Nah, I wish I was, Benny." You know what I'm saying? The way you introduced yourself to me, I kind of wish I was. He had a twin. He was sitting up there with Salute to Service Veterans.
Oh, nice.
Raider shirt. Yeah, he had on one of those, and he looked just like you. I said, "Ooh, I finally get to run with Vinny here at the Raiders Tavern and Grill," you know what I'm saying? But
oh, man, that would have been nice, Gangster Raider, for sure. I was not there on Sunday. It was funny, my family went there over the weekend, though, but I was not there. But that's a cool place over there at the M Hotel, and no question.
Yeah, everything's perfect. Everything's first class. We felt welcome. They treated us with respect, and the food's excellent. The wine, I mean, that's why we went back on Sunday. The plan was just to only go once. But it was so good, we went back on Sunday. It would have went today if I wasn't leaving today. Matter of fact, I'm on the 15 right now, just past Boston on the way back. I just left.
Be careful, number one, on the drive home. But a real quick question. Did you get a chance to go over to the practice facility over there right down the street from the M Hotel?
No, that was the plan, too, but I ran out of time. We stayed at the casino too long today. So I didn't get
no doubt.
But I'll be back because I wanted to come up there Friday, but I couldn't get through. You know what I'm saying? But I was going to call and tell y'all because I was close. I was going to come up there and tell y'all I was close to the facility.
Oh, man, that
would
be nice.
I didn't know y'all switched the hours from 3 to 5. I thought it was still 4 to 6 on Friday. So I started calling at 4:20 because my tour was over at 4:20. So I started calling
as soon as my tour was over. Yeah, because we do the Las Vegas Aviators, the baseball team, the AAA baseball team plays right at. We do their broadcast, so they're on their first pitch is 5:20, I think today, wherever it is that they're playing. So, what was your favorite part of Allegiant Stadium?
My favorite part was the locker room. To me, the locker room, then the field. And I got a question. We got to get Tupac on pitcher up there. They got Elvis and Marilyn Monroe, but Tupac was a Raider fan, and he died in Vegas. So we got to get a picture of Tupac up in there somewhere. That's my only complaint. But everything
all right, I'll definitely run that one up the flagpole. Really appreciate it, Gangster Raider. Can't wait to see you during the regular season. We're going to do some, try to do some get-togethers.
You hear me?
Go ahead.
Can I get a happy birthday and a welcome to Raider Nation from my girl, Eartha?
Yep, absolutely. Happy birthday, Eartha. Welcome to Raider Nation. The first of a long time being part of Raider Nation. Really appreciate it. And happy birthday, Eartha. There you go, man. Really appreciate the call, Gangster Raider. Back out to the Raider Nation listener line. Polo wants to talk about win totals. How you doing, Polo?
How you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm doing good. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you were asking a question about what our win total, loss total, and sack totals will be for this upcoming season. I think we'll make playoffs this year. I think we'll go 10-6 at least.
Well, there's 17 games.
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. I'm going to go and say 11-6.
Okay, there you go.
6. And I have a lot of optimism for Gus Bradley's system coming in. And I think that's what it's all going to depend on. I think the offense has been a playoff caliber offense for a while now. Where our struggles are obviously are on defense. And anyone who doesn't see that doesn't pay attention. I think that we lost a lot by letting Buckner go and bringing in Martinelli, but I mean, I understand he's Gruden's boy and everything, but I thought that it wasn't a great decision because I think Buckner was a great coach.
I don't think it had anything to do. You know, I think they felt like I'm not going to say that they kind of understood where this thing was all headed, but I think they understood that there was a possibility of where this was all headed. And when I say this, I mean, you know, Gus Bradley and getting this staff together. And I think this is the staff that John Gruden truly wants. And I think the thing with Rod Marinelli last year, it's hard to, he's a veteran coach and he understands the chain of command, and he was following the lead of Paul Gunther. And there were some things that defensive line did last year schematically that sometimes I would wonder if that was Rod Marinelli's first choice or if he was just simply following the orders of Paul Gunther, the defensive coordinator. But I think now with Gus Bradley and the familiarity that he has with Gus Bradley, they have a close relationship. I think there's going to be better synergy between those two, and I think that's going to be reflected in how that unit plays. And I think Rod Marinelli is as good as it gets on the defensive line, nothing against the previous coach. But I think when you get a chance to bring in somebody of that caliber, somebody who has a track record of developing players and getting the most out of players, I think it stands to reason that you do it. And then also when you now put him in the same picture as a Gus Bradley, I think it makes a lot of sense. And we'll see. Now his unit has to perform. That's the bottom line. Back out to the Raider Nation listener line. Mitch wants to talk about the Raiders. How you doing, Mitch?
Hey, how's it going, Vinny? How's everything?
I'm doing good, thanks.
Hey, doesn't it seem... Well, first of all, I just saw Zubek now is in the outfit for the Clippers.
Yep.
What else can go wrong for this team? I mean, you know, it was funny after I spoke to you Friday and you told me about the thing, the small role that it is with how it became a tenant, second banana, to always be second banana to the Lakers.
Right.
The Lakers, oh no, wait. Somebody sold 20% of the Lakers to two minority.
Yeah, Phil Anschutz, who owns Staples Center and owns the Kings, AEG. Phil Anschutz had a stake in the Lakers, and he sold it. And he sold it to the group that owns the Dodgers. So the Dodger ownership group has purchased Phil's minority stake of the Lakers, and I want to say that based on valuations, I think the Lakers are valued up and above $5 billion. So whatever the stake was that Phil sold, I think it was sold for like $1.5 billion. So do that math for a second. It's crazy that a minority stake went for $1.5 billion. I'm going to double check to make sure that that's accurate.
A minority stake. That's incredible. I always thought it was like a law, like one owner can own only one team, but it's just in the same sport.
Yes, you can, but it has to all be in the same city.
And as Magic Johnson has partnership of both the Lakers and Dodgers already? I mean, a small percentage.
I think he still has. I don't know if he still has a stake in the Lakers, to be honest with you. I'd have to check that. But what I'm saying is, for instance, the owner of the Rams owns, or his he did own. The Denver Nuggets and the Colorado Avalanche in Denver, right? He had to transfer ownership of those two teams to his son, and I think daughter too, or his children, in order for him to be able to buy the Rams when he did in St. Louis. So if that makes any sense, so you can do it, but you have to. It all has to be within the same city. You can't own an NFL team in Dallas and own the Minnesota Timberwolves in Minnesota.
And Minnesota, the city of Minnesota, has to be kicking themselves when the Lakers go. I had it for win.
Right. That was kind of bound to happen because there wasn't anything going on. I mean, the West Coast was so vacant, and it was inevitable that expansion and teams were going to start moving out west in all sports. That's what, you know, it was not too long after the Brooklyn Dodgers moved to Los Angeles and the San Francisco, or the New York Giants moved to San Francisco. So teams were westward bound, and I think for in the long haul, that was the right decision for for the Lakers, no question.
Well, for Vegas, yeah, they got to expand. Hopefully, teams like. I heard somebody say that Michael Jordan would be perfect to bring his team to Vegas. I mean, you had the Pelicans with that. And just two things. I know I've taken a lot of your time. Doesn't it seem like Domusu should have been a Raider? I know they're most tolerant. A lot of plays get the last cup of coffee with the Raiders. I've always known. You can name hundreds of players that, you know, their main forte was with other teams and they finished their careers with the Raiders. And something that happened with Derek Carr, I still think they have a pretty good backup quarterback. I think he would start for Denver at least, and then quite a few other teams.
I agree with you. I think the Raiders' quarterback situation is pretty darn good from top to bottom, with Derek Carr as a starter, obviously, and Marcus Mariota as the backup. I don't think, you know, Derek Carr is a warrior. I mean, he's missed just a couple of games in his career. Came back from that injury against the Chargers to start the very next game. I think what I want to say was against the Miami Dolphins, or vice versa. I can't remember exactly how that all played out. But I think if something were to happen to Derek Carr, the Raiders are in good shape with Marcus Mariota. But I also believe, and thanks for the call, Mitch, I also believe that Marcus Mariota is somebody, now that he has a year under his belt here with the Raiders, absorbing the offense, understanding, you know, everything that's going on. And again, you know, Marcus Mariota coming to the Raiders the way he did last year without an offseason, the John Gruden offense is not the easiest to learn on the fly like that. If I'm a Raider fan, I'm pretty excited that Marcus Mariota now has a year under his belt and then some in this system, because I think, I don't know this for sure, but I would have to believe that now that he does have a better command of this offense, I would think that at some point there's going to be something written into the game plan that includes a Marcus Mariota in order to take advantage of the, you know, skill set that he brings to the table. You know, we've talked about so much how the Raiders in the red zone didn't score as many touchdowns as they wanted to. You wonder if Marcus Mariota can help every once in a while in that area of the field with his ability to run it and be a threat, a dual threat, in addition to being able to throw it. I know, and Lincoln Kennedy and I have talked about this on and off the air, you don't want to lose Derek Carr in the process, but there's examples across the NFL, Drew Brees being one of them, where it worked, where an established quarterback understood the importance of having somebody behind him that could come in situationally to add an element that Drew Brees didn't bring to the Saints. And so Taysom Hill would come in, and the Saints have been pretty effective, were pretty effective doing that. If somebody like a Drew Brees, a future Hall of Famer, can get over that hurdle of nobody wants to come off the field, let's be honest. No quarterback wants to come off the field. Every quarterback, Tom Brady saying what he said, thinks that they're the best option and think that when they're in the red zone, they want to be on the field and nobody else need apply, right? But that's understandable, and we get that. But for the good of the team, sometimes if you have a Marcus Mariota who could put a little bit of pressure on a defense in a certain way and maybe change things up on the fly to be able to better take advantage of some of those trips down into the red zone and maybe some of those short yardage situations, why not? You're paying him. He's a good quarterback. He's got skills. He showed that against the Chargers that he can still play. If I'm John Gruden, I am definitely writing in some packages for Marcus Mariota this year, especially now that he's healthy, especially now that he's got a year and plus, year plus under his belt. You're in the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignor. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignor on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
So what do you think, everybody? The Phoenix Suns punched their ticket to the NBA Finals tonight against the Los Angeles Clippers. Tough to see the Clippers coming back from a 3-1 hole without Kawhi Leonard. Looks like Zubac, their center, former Laker, is not playing today with a knee injury. Man, what tough luck for the Atlanta Hawks yesterday, losing Trae Young now with a foot injury, stepped on the foot of a referee. Just some weird injuries this year across the NBA, and I think that one was just a fluke, but so many others, you wonder if the condensed season, trying to squeeze as many games into a shorter period of time as the NBA did. I understand it. They wanted to try to make up for a lost revenue last year due to COVID-19. Get it. Totally understand it. But, you know, from the beginning, it was going to put some players at risk trying to squeeze that many games in. And I think that we've seen the effect of that. I mean, maybe there isn't a correlation between all the injuries that we saw in the NBA and the kind of schedule that they tried to play this year or did play this year. But I mean, at some point, common sense prevails, right? And you're starting thinking, well, it's just too much of a coincidence. It's just like left and right. I was watching, the games over the weekend, just thinking to myself, it really is, besides Giannis from the Milwaukee Bucks, the star power, and no disrespect to anybody, but the superstar power right now seems more like the B-list than the A-list. You know, when you don't have Steph and you don't have Clay and you don't have, LeBron James and you don't have, Kevin Durant, you don't have the biggest stars in the game at this stage. I mean, when was the last time that there was a finals without LeBron or Steph? Right? To me, they're probably the two best players in the game when everything is right, when they're healthy. I'm thinking when the last time that might have been. And before that, it would have been the San Antonio Spurs with Tim Duncan, Ginobili and Tony Parker, and definitely a younger Kawhi at that point. Prior to that, it was Kobe, right, and the Lakers. LeBron and Wade and those guys, and so it's just like that superstar level, because of the injuries has just it's been decimated. No KD, no Kyrie, no LeBron, no Anthony Davis, no Steph Curry. You're down to, you know, Paul George, who to me is a when it comes to the superstars,
playoff P.
He's a B-list guy, right? He's not. You know, he's not one of the superstars. Like, if he was an actor, Damon, who would Paul George be?
Ooh, that's a good one. Ah, man, because he's definitely going to be somebody. He's not A-list, but, you know, he's in a lot of movies. He'd be a good that guy. I'm really trying to think of who would a Paul George be.
You I mean, who's him? The he's not Bradley Cooper, maybe? I mean, I don't know. Is that
Bradley Cooper's too high, man.
Bradley Cooper's too high. Yeah, I'm thinking that he might be a little bit too high as well. Because you got your Brad Pitts, you got all your main.
You know what? You know, I've seen
Denzel. You know,
you've seen The Hangover, right?
Oh yeah.
If you're like huge into comedy, you have Ed Helms. He was Stu in The Hangover, but I feel like Ed Helms, he's always a guy, like, he was in The Office with like Steve Carell. They both were on The Daily Show, but at
love
different
that
times.
Show, yeah.
It's always like you're not Steve Carell, but man, Ed Helms is funny. But nobody's going to, like, Ed Helms isn't going to star in something the way Steve Carell will. I know it's not like matinee movie idol looks, like that type of actor.
Right,
but it's
right.
Just like when it comes to comedy where it's like, oh, he's funny. But, you know,
yeah, we're talking about like box
guy.
Office, somebody that you know is going to deliver, right? It's going to be a good movie if you go and people are going to go watch, you know. I don't know, but you know, and Devin Booker, you know, he's kind of like the young up and coming guy, but you know, short of mass injuries, right? Does Devin Booker ever, you know what I'm saying? Like he's kind of there a little bit.
Well, I mean, sometimes you just got to beat who's in front of you in the Phoenix Suns.
No, of course. But let's be realistic. I don't think that I think with a healthy Kawhi, I don't think the Phoenix Suns beat the Clippers. I certainly don't think that they beat the Lakers with a healthy Anthony Davis and LeBron and, you know, everyone else that was, you know, the Lakers beat them, what, twice, was it? Did they win two games in that series? One was they just mopped the floor with them. I think that a healthy Laker team beats this Phoenix Sun teams. I think a healthy Golden State Warriors team beats these Suns. I think probably a healthy Clippers team should, right, beat these Suns. So, you know, and like Atlanta, a healthy you know, KD and Kyrie and Jay. Let's not forget James Harden was not nearly himself in the playoffs. A healthy Brooklyn Nets is the best team in the East, right?
Without a doubt.
Okay, and definitely they're better than the Atlanta Hawks. Maybe it's a good series between the between the Milwaukee Bucks and the Brooklyn Nets, but I think that the Brooklyn Nets are talent wise just the best team in the East. So, but you know, and if you look through the history, every once in a while there will be a year like this where, like, if you look back and you go, wow, how did that team make the finals? And I'm talking even in the you know, 70s, in the 80s, it was always Magic, Bird, Dr. J, or Isaiah and that Detroit team. Those are the teams that won the championships. It was the Lakers, the Celtics, the Philadelphia 76ers, and the Sixers had like Moses Malone, Dr. J, Maurice Cheeks.
But Vinny, Andrew, I'm looking up an article because you made me think of this because we're talking about these injuries. But Tom Haberstroh, like, well, for NBC Sports, he did like a list of every champion that has an asterisk next to his name. And you know how many teams have an asterisk next to their championship?
For the NBA?
Yes.
Well, some people are saying last year was an asterisk.
One. No, he put it on every single, and he put like a little blurb, just like a nice little paragraph or two about each. How you can, if you want to not like contort yourself to be a contortionist to like maybe try to discredit a team, but if you just want to look at facts, just about every team in any given season, you can put how their championship is an asterisk.
Oh, I'd have to look at that article, but it's hard for me to believe you could say that about any of the Bulls teams, Lakers teams, Celtics teams, Detroit and Philadelphia teams that won championships. And then the Spurs with Duncan and those guys and the, I think in basketball, it's usually the best team wins, man. You know, it's really is like that. And you're usually going to play the best, but like the best team. There's really no getting to the NBA finals is really, really hard. And there's, and winning it is even harder. There's no, that I can think of, flukes. Even the, listen, in 1989, the Lakers are going for three-peat, okay? They swept the Western Conference playoffs into the finals. They had Magic Johnson, Orlando Woolridge, Michael Cooper, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I mean, the whole team. It was stacked. They swept. They didn't lose a game in the Western Conference playoffs, right? The night before game one, the Lakers are practicing, and the last drill of the last practice before game one starts, Byron Scott, who I think was an all-star that year or close to it, goes down with a hamstring injury, all right? So before game one, the Lakers are without Byron Scott, okay? In, I want to say game one, Magic Johnson goes down with a hamstring injury.
It was game
injury.
Three.
I think he tried to play again in game two or something along those lines, but couldn't. And so he was out. So it was like Tony Campbell and Michael Cooper were the guards.
But Vinny, what about the year before? See, that's why every championship has an asterisk. In 88, Isaiah Thomas hurt his ankle in game six.
Yeah, but the Lakers were still favored.
Isaiah Thomas was barely able to play in game seven.
Yeah, so I was like, the Lakers were going for that title a year sooner. The Lakers were going for their second straight championship against the Pistons that year. And so they were favored to win that. And they did win it. And yes, Isaiah did get hurt. He did come back and play. But no doubt, that helped. It certainly helped. I wouldn't say that should be an asterisk. And I wouldn't say that even with the Pistons, because they ended up coming back and winning the next year a championship. And the next year after that, they won. So they were worthy champions. I don't think they won three straight, or maybe they did. I have to look to see if they won three straight. But anyway, this year, without question, this is the one year where you can say, like, this was a weird, fluky kind of year. I like it because I think, you know, to see somebody like a Devin Booker or Chris Paul, who's put the time in, win a championship, that would be great. I'd love to see, that would be great. I don't, without Trae Young, I don't see the Hawks now getting past the Milwaukee Bucks. I don't mind Giannis. I think he's a fantastic, wonderful player for the NBA. But it just shows you that the star power right now it feels like a film festival where none of the great pictures of that year are in the film festival. It's just a bunch of really good, very good guys, you know, actors and movies, but not. It's definitely not the A-list, but still, I'm enjoying the heck out of it and looking forward to tonight's game, the Suns against the Clippers. Want to say thanks to all the callers. Always appreciate it. Want to say thanks to Sam Gordon for being a guest and sharing his insight on where the Raiders right now and where the Aces are right now. Want to say thanks to Devon Cotton for making this sound great and doing everything that he does. We're back at it tomorrow, one more day, 3 to 5 p.m. Go Aviators. They're on right after we get off. We'll talk to you tomorrow, 3 to 5, in the huddle. Vinny Bonsignor brought to you by Tequila Embajador.
Hey, guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation in the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the Beyond Nicotine experience with its Beyond Tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, Beyond Tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.